Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. There are many life changes that can happen after divorce that make it difficult or impossible to uphold requirements of your divorce decree. The orders issued in a divorce are based on the facts presented at that time, but the circumstances used in issuing those orders can obviously change. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass Nothing But Net and Up and Under networks. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Welcome, Pelicans fans, to another rendition of The Bird Calls, our podcast for thebirdrights.com. It's our summer league wrap-up edition with myself, David Grubb, along with Chris Connor, David Fisher, and our editor-in-chief, Ali Cosell. Gentlemen, we are done with summer league. It wasn't exactly what we thought in some ways, and it exceeded expectations in others. Pelicans go 4-2, making it to the semifinals of the summer league tournament. Let's go from the team perspective first, before we get into the individuals. Chris, we'll start with you. What did you see over the course of what was your biggest positive takeaway over the six games, and what was the biggest issue you saw?
Well, I mean, you know, individually, you know, we could, from top to bottom, we could pick apart, you know, some of the guys who will be more than likely candidates to be on the team down the line. But from a team perspective, I definitely liked the energy, you know, considering, well, I mean, outside of this last game, but I liked the energy. I liked how smooth some of these guys ended up looking playing together. With a lot of the roster shaking up from, you know, Zion being out there, well, Zion and Frank in game one, and then introducing the rookies, Dede Jackson and Naw in game three and beyond. I liked how, you know, the guys really didn't look like they were afraid of any moments, you know, playing together. And it seemed like, you know, that first game that we witnessed on Monday just wasn't their first time playing with each other. They seemed to have fun. They seemed passionate. They showed a lot of the right signs that you want to see. And I mean, what else can you really ask for out of summer league basketball? If I could say, you know, I mean, from a negative perspective, I mean, it's things that you really expect out of young kids. I mean, for the most part, you know, some of the ball security issues. Some of the strength and conditioning things that we'll see them work on, and Aaron Nelson and the staff get these guys going. And then, outside of that, just adjusting to, you know, different types of players, a different speed, anticipation, those type of things. But I think overall, as they continue to play and they get used to playing at the next level and playing against superior talent, and then, you know, through training camp, all those things will come.
Ali, I'm going to throw some team stats at you real quick, and while we're still talking about the team perspective. And I know these are not perfect because, again, we're talking about guys who have not played together, but there are some really encouraging numbers in the Pelican stats. They scored 92.3 points per game, allowing 82.6. As they shot better than their opponents, shooting 42.9% over the course of the tournament and allowing 40%. And from three, they made roughly 34% of their shots while giving up 26.7% from deep. the one thing we did kind of see out of those first few games especially was a consistent defensive effort. How important and how difficult do you think it is getting guys who hadn't played together to kind of show that effort defensively?
I think that's really hard, David, because as you know, it's one thing to give effort, but you still got to be on the same page too. Because as you know, individual effort on a basketball court and professional basketball, it has to be connected. I mean, for it to be effective at all. So you've got to learn a lot more than just, you know, coming out, hey, I'm going to give my 110%. No, you got to listen to what the coaches say. And they only had, what, I think 3 days to prepare for this, like 3 or 4 days in Vegas before their first game. And so for them to, you know, come out, like you said, the defensive effort was really strong. And I was particularly impressed by Big B Williams in those first couple of games. And everybody was, you know, basically the talk was Zion that first game, then Frank exploding for 30 points. But I thought he was solid before the Pelicans got their prospects to join and be available to play in these games. So that was impressive to me. I just want to go back to that bigger takeaway, though. And I think the important thing to take away from these games is, yeah, individually you can, you know, grade these players with a lot of positives and negatives. But I think the overall thing for me, and I kind of touched on it quickly in my recap, was the fact that I'm happy that we seem to have gotten some kind of decent confirmation that, you know, the New Orleans Pelicans front office, David Griffin, Trajan Langdon, they went out in this draft and they hit that home run that we kind of were thinking they did, right? They traded that fourth overall pick, that Lakers pick originally, to the Atlanta Hawks, turned them into three players. And you know what? We saw a lot of good things out of those three players to where we see there's potential, NBA potential in all three of those players. So to me, I feel like that's my biggest takeaway. For, you know, franchise, as fans, we've been starved just to watch legitimate talent join this team, let alone show up in a summer league. And boy, we were given gobs of it. So that to me is my biggest takeaway. But yeah, David, there were some impressive stuff. There are things that we saw from the players individually, like you said, the defense, and then it turned into, like, I thought an offensive showcase once N'Keal Walker was given the ball handling duties. And once, you know, he had options on the wings, like with Hayes battling down low on cuts, and of course scores around him. Silva really showed up. Blewett was kind of pretty decent off the bench, he proved to be. And then there were other facets as well, but we're going to get into all that, I'm sure. I'll let, you know,
yeah,
let's bounce this over to Fish.
Yeah, Fish, besides your biggest takeaway, I also want to ask you a cultural question. You saw the entire Pelicans front office, of course, was in Vegas, along with Coach Gentry. The medical staff was there as well, for the most part. And then you talk about just seeing Griff, what he said about his players over the course of the week. He was interviewed a number of times on a number of platforms. The camaraderie amongst that staff, the intensity you saw, the energy out of Alvin, and you saw Swin being involved in social media, that togetherness from the front office and your biggest takeaway, what were your observations there? Fish? All right. I guess we lost Fish to technical difficulties. Chris, do you want to hit on that about the cultural impact of just continuing to see what Griffin's doing in creating this new culture for the Pelicans?
Well, yeah, man. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, you watch teams like the San Antonio Spurs, and, you know, it's kind of it's different, you know, for this team being able to sort of have some part of a farm system, right? To where, like, when you look at the Spurs, they've built a culture to where they may draft a guy and you may not hear from him from another 2 or 3 years. And I don't know, you know, you're like, where did this guy come from? Like, oh yeah, they drafted him 2 years ago, stashed him over in Sweden. And, you know, here he is on the floor. And I'm like, oh, okay. And they've continued to do that. That isn't something that, you know, just that you can just do once and people get used to it. You know, it's something through organization, through a vision, through a sense of you know, of togetherness that builds over time. And I mean, it's only been, you know, we're only getting through, you know, the end of one off season, but, you know, it looks like, and even if you're not comparing it to the Spurs, it looks like that's part of what David Griffin is wanting to put together. You know, he wants to be versatile. He wants, you know, we heard him say multiple times that Zion isn't a savior. Well, I mean, part of that is because, you know, you're drafting guys that, you know, we're getting excited about these guys in the summer league. We don't know 100% if these guys are going to play meaningful minutes throughout the season. And if they don't, that just shows, once again, what type of roster Griffin has put out together from what, and Langdon, of course, have put out there from start to finish. I think it's, you know, it's good that he's delivered on the things that he said he was trying to do, what he wanted to put together so far. He said he wanted togetherness. He said he wanted a family type of atmosphere. It looks and feels like a family. They, you know, these guys seem to be everywhere together. Everyone seems like, you know, they're having fun. People from the minute they meet each other, you know, when we were up there at the press conference, you know, I really, when Hayes, Didi, and Nal were introduced, you know, their individual personalities weren't able to shine right away. But then you watch them on the floor and you watch them in the post games afterwards, and these guys were walking around like best friends. You know, it's really something else when you compare the dysfunction that we've seen from past Pelicans and Hornets teams and front office structures over the years. It's just really, you know, it brings us a sign of relief that it feels like it's going in the right way. And I mean, they're only building, man. You know, we haven't even seen, you know, a full 365 of what Griff wants to put together, man. I mean, it's something really wonderful to watch.
Fish, we got you back.
We'll see. Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So what was your biggest takeaway from a team perspective from the Pelicans in their 4-2 record out in Vegas?
Investment. It feels like the Pelicans front office is invested in winning in every single facet of what they do. Whereas the previous regime was very focused on just the NBA product during the regular season and making the postseason. It feels like David Griffin is taking a holistic approach where we need to win every single avenue that we're competing in. We need to win the draft, not by just punting on it. We need to win summer league by investing in it and putting a good product on the floor, something that is going to give us the opportunity to evaluate and improve these players. One of the things that jumped out at me in his brief time on the broadcast today was the fact he was talking about Jackson Hayes and what he watched in tape just of summer league. A lot of folks on Pelican, not on Pelicans, on Twitter and stuff say, oh, it's just summer league and brush it off. But here, these players, these NBA professionals are watching the tape of this summer league stuff that we try to act like is, you know, relatively meaningless. So they want to win at every level, and every single time that the New Orleans Pelicans are out there, they intend to win at the thing that they're competing right now. They're not going to just brush off any single part of this organization and the operation to focus someplace else. They're going to have the manpower and the bodies. I mean, you saw the shot that they were, I think it was maybe in the second or the third game, where they showed the Pelicans had like three rows deep of staff there in Pelicans polo shirts, which kind of looked a little weird, little like school uniform kind of thing going on because everyone has the exact same shirt on. But at the same time, it's like they are completely investing in every single facet of being an NBA franchise. And you can't say that that was the case 6 months ago. And that's the biggest takeaway for me, regardless of the results in the games and stuff. What we saw all around that is that they are completely invested in winning in every single facet of being an NBA franchise now.
Yeah, for me, I think it's a similar feeling. I wasn't as concerned about the record coming in. It was just, how did they compete? What were their attitudes towards each other? Were they going to, were you going to see guys trying to stay within themselves for the most part? And I think overall, that's what you got out of this team. I don't think anybody got too far out of pocket as far as what their skills were. You saw some individual, you know, superhero ball, but overall, that culture of team, you could see it. And you could also see the confidence that the group had, not just in their individual play, but in each other. And I thought that was a great positive. Now let's go to the individuals. They were outside of Zion and Frank Jackson, who both only played the opener. Obviously the five most statistically, if not with their play as well, impressive players were Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Trevon Blewett, Jackson Hayes, Cavell Bigby-Williams, and Didi. And that's not in any order. But out of those guys, let's start with Didi, the guy who we probably knew the least about coming into this summer league. None of us had seen him play. We'll start with Ollie on him. What were your impressions of play, and where do you see him as of today? Obviously we know he's going to Australia to play in the NBL this season. What do you see as the plan for him?
Well, the plan is obviously development, and I know he's 20 years old, so you may look at that, oh, he's a year older, pretty much in Zion and Hayes and stuff like that. But look, this guy played in the Brazilian league, so I'm assuming that league was probably a little bit lesser than what, you know, good competition the NCAA is. And if you read his scouting reports, if you ever got a chance to read them, boy, they were really full of holes in terms of where I rated him as incomplete, because what I read was this guy couldn't play on the ball at all. He was just totally off the ball guy, and his best part of his game was post-ups. I didn't read anything about him defensively. I don't think his shot was rated all that highly, you know, and we didn't read anything about, you know, really good intensity. And I saw all those things in Las Vegas. So that's why I'm really excited about this guy. He came out of nowhere. The Pelicans front office seemingly were the only people in the NBA draft that we know of. I mean, I'm sure there was some we had heard interest about from the Nets, maybe the Hawks, but overall they seemed to be really high on this guy to take him 35th. When he wasn't even, you know, predicted to be taken in the top 60 by most talent evaluators. And then we saw him show well in these games, right? Coming from like a, you know, what, a C-rated league to, you know, I know it's just summer league, but again, he played a lot better than a lot of first rounders that we've seen play in these games. So you got to be high on him, because if he develops and he's got, you know, that's what I'm excited about. He's got the body. He seems to have enough athleticism, enough awareness, and that determination. You know, he showed that motor, I feel like, in the way he hustled, the way, you know, how excited he got after coming up with that last second steal in the last game to seal the win over the Heat. There's a lot of examples there. So him just showing up and playing well, I think, is my biggest surprise of these games for the Pelicans, no doubt.
Yeah, he finished with 11 points per game. Out of the perimeter players, he had the highest field goal percentage at 44%, added 3 boards, 2 assists, and 1.5 steals during summer league. Chris, I mean, again, another, we had not seen this kid at all. He was a complete unknown. And you can clearly see that the staff is high on him now. Do you think there's justifiable excitement in him, or is it just kind of like, we need to see more before we start to really feel like he can be a long-term contributor?
Well, I mean, I think it's a mixture of both. I mean, but when you look at him, at least from my perspective, a lot of the little things that I watch him do for a person that's getting used to playing in these type of environments versus what he had been, you know, doing in Brazil. I mean, I'd say that number one, defensively, I had no idea that, I mean, I knew he had decent athleticism. I knew he was, you know, he was pretty rangy. But he seemed to have better instincts that I, you know, had saw, you know, directly on film. Outside of that, there was a sense of, you know, of calm. Like he never looked like he was going to go at any pace other than his own. He felt like, you know, it seemed like a lot of things that he was doing from some of his passes, his shots were all premeditated. Like nothing, I never looked at Didi and really think, okay, you know, he's a little bit out of control there. Does he have flaws that he needs to fix? Absolutely. I mean, I'd like to see him work on, you know, his mid-range game. You know, I was very surprised that he was as sturdy as an outside shooter. You know, but when it's all said and done, considering this is a guy that we hadn't saw and that he was a second round pick, I think, I mean, the excitement does make sense. We're going to have to take a little bit more time with him. like the rest of these guys. But when it's all said and done, I think that the Pelicans have another guard, another combo guard that, you know, in a few years, similarly to what, you know, we were talking about with San Antonio and how what Brooklyn has been able to do the past few years, that is going to be able to come up and, you know, burst back onto a scene. I'm not sure, you know, if it will take that amount of time or how long it will take. I don't think he can, you know, he can come in right away, you know, and make a big impact. But just his overall awareness is what caught me. His smarts, his instincts, the way he fought through screens. You know, I mean, I know we talked, or there was, you know, some discussion about his language barrier on the floor. I mean, he seems to speak the overall basketball language. And I mean, that's something that's really good to see starting off.
One of the questions that we got was from Ryan Hebert, who we all know very well from our Burger Street Shots. And Fish, he asked, what would you think that Didi needs to really focus on as an area of improvement? He asked about the three big guys in general, but let's start with Didi. And where would you focus on him improving during this season?
Honestly, with what I saw, the biggest thing is the basketball IQ is, it looks like it's there, but I feel like, and this was mentioned multiple times, getting over the language barrier is probably going to be the biggest thing for him. He's not a native English speaker, and English is kind of the language of the NBA. So I would say actually that was the biggest thing. The other thing is that jumped out at me, and this jumped out at me pretty much for every single Pelican outside of Alexander Walker, was I wasn't ever confident about Luzada Silva dribbling in traffic. And that would be someplace where he can tighten up. The shot looked good. It felt to me like he gets the shot off quickly. There were a couple times where he had the opportunity to shoot, and he instead kind of delayed and then tried to attack a closeout that wasn't necessarily a very strong closeout. So that's a little bit of a decision-making thing. But the biggest thing I would say is the language barrier and the ability to put the ball down on the floor. Because a lot of it, especially with him, is what are your expectations relative to where he's coming in at, where he's the 35th pick that's going to be a draft and stash. So I'm very excited about where he is relative to what I expect the 35th pick in the NBA draft to provide. So if he can just tighten up that handle a little bit and work, you know, obviously he's going to be playing, you know, in the Australian League this year, or
Australia.
New Zealand?
Australia.
Okay.
Australia.
Yeah. All right. So he's going to be playing in Australia. So he's going to be surrounded by English speakers in that kind of league as well, in that situation. But honestly, just the English basketball IQ in terms of when do I tack the closeout versus where do I go ahead and just take the shot and be comfortable shooting over. I mean, one of the things that we don't talk about as much is what is an open shot, even in summer league, is a substantially greater contested shot than wherever most of these people came from, even in the NCAA, because in the NCAA, you don't necessarily deal with the length or the athleticism that you have even now in summer league, even if it's not necessarily as harnessed and controlled and, you know, in a structure like you would necessarily in an NCAA environment. So, but those would be the two biggest things three. I'm kind of jumping on three things. Number one would be the language barrier and getting over that, the handle, and then, you know, when do I shoot versus attack the closeout? Those would be the biggest things. But relative to reasonable expectations for a 35th pick, I feel like he has exceeded what our expectations maybe should have been coming into the summer league.
Yeah, I think he definitely has demonstrated value. Let's move on to another guy who has probably exceeded our expectations as well based on his summer league play, the number 8 pick overall, Jackson Hayes, who came in, put up 16 points, 7 boards, 1.3 blocks, even though it felt like he had more than that, and he shot 63% from the floor. So, Chris, I'm going to let you start with Jackson Hayes. How big of a surprise was his offensive package to you? Because it's, you know, from coming in, he was a dunking in the paint guy. And then defensively, what did you, what was your read on him?
Okay, so number one, it was surprising to see him as confident as he was shooting anything outside of 5 feet. Okay, so I mean, I remember when he shot that three, you know, without hesitation. I believe it was in game two. I mean, people were jumping out of their seat because, you know, you just didn't expect it. But early on in his first game, you know, for a guy who didn't shoot many in college, you know, he was completely confident in shooting a mid-range jumper. And it didn't always look the best. It didn't, you know, all of them didn't fall, but he shot them, which means it's something that he's more than likely working on, something that he will get better at. So I was definitely surprised by that. Now, I mean, on both sides of the floor, I mean, everyone's talked about it. He's going to have to get stronger everywhere. He's going to have to, you know, he's going to have to improve his core strength. And David Griffin talked about that. His upper body strength is going to have to improve. You know, he's going to have to, you know, get beefier around his leg area. You know, there's a bunch of different things because right now it just looks like he's throwing his body all around, you know. I saw you talk about Grubb, his inability right now to really box out because he's using his athleticism to compensate for his lack of strength, which is totally fine. A lot of centers, a lot of big guys that have his makeup, you know they have to get there somewhere somehow, and that's typically it. The thing about him is that he has such unreal athleticism. Is that, you know, you would hope that he doesn't depend on it, you know, too much going forward. But I think that the staff, the strength and conditioning staff will work on that with him in no time. One of the things that I worry about the most with him, I mean, he's going to have to figure out at some point what to do with the basketball, with plays that don't end either at a line drive finish or a lob at the basket. You know, right now, and it goes back to his strength, he has a tendency to kind of like dip his shoulder. And that sometimes has him putting up like an awkward looking, you know, hook of sorts. You know, I mean, all of that, I'm sure, again, you know, he'll work with. I mean, the kid is really raw. He hasn't played much basketball. But when you look at the passion, the motor, the fire, and just some of the unreal athletic plays that, you know, that he makes, just not knowing anything yet. It's really, really encouraging. And I guess, I mean, the only other negative is that, you know, he throws his body around a little bit too much for my liking. He was on the floor a little bit too much for my liking. I'm hoping that as he gets bigger, as he gets stronger, more confident in his skills, that won't be, you know, a tendency, because at the next level, he's going to get hurt, you know, carrying himself around like that. It was a little bit reckless, but I mean, hey man, the kid's what, 18, 19, he's having fun. He was on a fun summer league roster. But you know, all in all, I mean, we can call him a prospect. We can call him raw, you know, whatever it is. That kid has a lot of tools. He can do a lot of different things and will get better at a lot of things going forward. I'm really excited to watch his overall development.
Yeah, Ollie, for a guy who's only played 2 years really of competitive basketball, and for him to, you know, the expectations now as a number eight pick, usually in the lottery, people are expecting that to be a guy who's going to play significant minutes. But as Chris alluded to, David Griffin says this is somebody we need to bring along slowly. How do you manage that with fans who see that display of athleticism and you see those raw skills, and then the rationale of, there's a big difference between this and the NBA game on a night-to-night basis?
Yeah, that's going to be mainly that responsibility is going to fall, I think, on people like us, right, who are kind of vocal on Twitter, social media, or through our writing, to where we kind of convey that. Because, look, this guy did have a lot of great glimpses, and I am more excited about him than I thought I would be after watching him play here in the summer league. But he's got a long way to go. And my best example is yesterday when we were playing the Miami Heat. He got pushed from one end of the box all the way to the other by Kyle Alexander, who pretty much weighs about the same as he does. He tried to box him out, but his technique was bad. He didn't have the strength, weight, nothing. And he, like I said, literally got pushed about 6 feet And so right then and there, I mean, this was even before Griffin today talked about, right, about the core strength. But it's obvious he's going to need to get a lot bigger, a lot stronger, and improve in a lot of areas. Like I said, technique. He basically needs to play and play a lot. I would love for him to play this summer, you know, a lot of 5-on-5, as well as being, of course, in the weight room and visiting some of New Orleans restaurants to put a little bit more weight on that body. But he's what we've always considered, David, and that when we've talked, and that's a project. And I think after these games, even though Didi Silver has a much lower ceiling, I feel like still Jackson Hayes is the bigger project. So you go from there. You can't have a project go from, just as you mentioned, 2 years of playing at a decent level, you know, where he was a starter in high school, then 1 year at Texas. He's not going to be ready for even 20 minutes in the NBA in his rookie season. I think he's still going to be that 2 to 3 year kind of project to where he's going to need to build up in a lot of these areas that I've mentioned to be able to get consistent playing time and prove effective in that time. So next year, I'm going to be a big proponent that I want to see Asai Jahlil Okafor, maybe once we see Melly, you know, other guys get time ahead of them if they want to focus on winning in the first part of the schedule. Once it becomes more of a development type of year, then of course you throw Hayes out there, but I'm going to be doing my best because I just don't see that him, he's ready. You know, we've got so much time with these guys and it's limited. I mean, look, he just has spent 2 weeks, but his amount of knowledge isn't there. We've already talked about his body, his skill set. So he's just got a long way to go. And anybody that knows the game saw that. So it shouldn't be too hard. But as for the other fans, you're right. All they see is these highlights, right? And they're like, wow, this guy's like one of the best leapers, best dunkers. You put him out there, you can change a game. So it's going to be our job kind of to downplay that a little bit, I think.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I noticed about him is like the lack of repetition. You can see it, the fact that he has not been in enough game situations, because you figure the average high school season is about 35 games. The average NBA, he played about with 30 games last year for Texas. So that's 65 basketball games. And you're maybe, you know, talk about, you know, if he's playing 20 minutes, 25 minutes a game in all of those, he hasn't played, you know, nearly enough basketball to have the instincts that go along with just seeing things on the court and knowing them. And you see it on his defensive movement with his feet. He still stays really high, which allows that lack of core strength to be exploited even further. Because when he doesn't open up well yet, again, it's not about can't. It's not about criticism. It's just when you haven't played enough, when you haven't done these drills enough, those are going to be the things that take a long time to come along. And so for them to put him on the floor against NBA offenses, I think would be a disservice to him for any significant amount of minutes, because he's going to get confused. He's going to get beaten, and he's going physically, and he's going to get beaten mentally, because he hasn't seen those things. But like you said, the upside, his ceiling, yeah, it looks incredibly high right now. And we'll just see how he develops physically. And Griffin pointed this out today too. He's still growing. So, you know, this kid could, you know, his body is not going to fill out for some time. It's not going to be a 1 year process for him to physically mature. Let's move on to Fish's favorite. So we got to be prepared for a long spiel now.
Oh, God.
Nikhil, I'm looking forward to this.
Alexander Walker, the overall scoring leader in summer leagues to this point, 24 points a game, almost 5 boards, 6 assists. He was top 5 in assists in the summer league, near the top in steals at 2.8. Fish, go ahead and just gush. Give it all you got. Let it out.
Well, I don't want to put undue pressure on the guy, because I think a lot of it's the fact that I was so excited about the fact that he fell. And initially, when they drafted him, I looked at what Nikhil Alexander Walker was going to be as a combo guard that could handle the ball a little bit and was going to be a good defensive contributor in a year or so, is what I thought. And then the Pelicans got out there the first time he was on the roster, and it was like, no, he's a point guard. Look, watch him. He's a point guard. He goes back to the big man you know, to start the break every single time. He understands he's doing, and not just the assists. He's getting the ball and he gets it at half court or three quarters court, and he sees the pass to kick it up, and he's doing that. He's, you know, he's making the pass ahead. There are so many highlight worthy passes that he made over the last four games that we don't see as highlights because the guy either just chose not to shoot the ball for reasons we can't even explain or failed to handle it. I mean, I can think of just in the last two games, probably at least 5 to 6 assists that with NBA talent around him would have been assists, but instead were either turnovers on his part or, you know, poorly executed shots at the rim because guys just can't gather and catch, which is pretty much when he passed it to almost anyone that wasn't Jackson Hayes. For all of the negatives that we've leaped on, you know, piled on Jackson Hayes, the one thing we can say is that guy's got hands. And after dealing with big men like Alexis Ejensa and Omar Asik, we should celebrate the fact that at least the Pelicans have a 19-year-old big man that can catch the ball with those big old mitts. But in terms of like what I saw from Nickeil Alexander is more about the stuff is there that you can mold into something. So he was maybe overly aggressive with some of the passes that he was making, especially the players that he was passing the ball to, the spaces that he was trying to fit these balls through. But I think as a coaching staff, it's going to be easy for the Pelicans to tell him to dial it back on the aggressiveness 10% than to take somebody who's more of a shooting guard and doesn't really see the floor and say, hey, can you create for others? It's far easier to tell somebody to dial it back a little bit than to invent something that isn't there. And that's specifically when we're talking about how Nickeil Alexander measures up with Frank Jackson, where Frank Jackson is a short guard that people think is a point guard, but no, he's just a shooting guard that's short. That's the extent of his skills. He's not a point guard. And just because you see that he's 6'3" with a tiny stand and reach and he really can't defend any position in the NBA beyond point guard doesn't necessarily make him a point guard. And what I saw from Nickeil Alexander Walker this week is the potential is there, and maybe he could be, you know, you would call him your backup point guard this season coming into it. He would be my favorite at this point. But when you consider that Lonzo Ball is in front of him and Lonzo Ball is a vastly more heralded prospect, and while Drew Holiday is going to start at what we call shooting guard, he's going to log minutes at point guard. A lot of those minutes might come in crunch time because you're a little concerned about having Lonzo Ball and his free throw shooting woes out there in those final, you know, possessions because of the possibility of somebody hacking it. So that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm expecting, you know, Nickeil Alexander Walker to log 2,000 minutes this year. But if he logs 1,400, 1,500 minutes and he's averaging somewhere between 20 and 24 minutes a game and he gets to run the offense a little bit in the second quarter, you know, early in the second, maybe late in the third and early in the fourth quarter. And one of his big goals is you just need to keep the pace up. And we saw that was one of the things that happened when he was on the floor and completely fell apart the moment that he left the floor, was the pace of play and the Pelicans getting into the rhythm that they wanted to get into. It only happened when Nickeil Alexander was on the floor at the controls. And for somebody who's never played, you know, NBA level basketball before, even though we're talking about summer league, that is a revelation in itself, because he's not like, say, like Brandon Clark, who's, you know, 23, almost 24 years old, where he's, you know, has a lot more experience and things like that. And he's not like these other rookies that we're looking at that have been in the league for a year or two and have already experienced NBA basketball at, you know, maximum speed, where summer league probably feels like it's dialed back to about 75-80% of that. No, he was, you know, the last game he played was with Virginia Tech in March, and he came right in and lit the world on fire. And that isn't to say, oh, he's going to come in, he's going to be the starter. But we saw enough, I think, for the 17th pick to say that might be a great value, and he might be your ninth or 10th man in the rotation, which isn't a huge ask for the 17th pick. I'm thinking just to his cousin, for instance, Gilgeous Alexander, who we talked about at length and how much we wanted to have him on this team in May. And Gilgeous Alexander logged 2,174 minutes last year and started 73 games. So all I'm saying is maybe 75% of that for Nickeil Alexander-Walker, which would still be a great season for a rookie. And when you're talking about one of many pieces that the Pelicans got in this Anthony Davis trade, it feels like a really good value. Now, long term, I'm much higher than everybody else because we're still talking about a guy who has point guard potential at 6 foot six, who can defend multiple positions. The biggest thing that jumped out at me outside of the fact that he can really pass the ball and he has great court vision and awareness, not just to the role man, but there were a couple plays where it always feels like he was kind of premeditating that he wanted to go to the weak side corner and the defender would drop to the corner and Alexander Walker would see that and kick it up to the guy on the weak side wing, which is a harder pass because it's not even in front of you. Now he's kind of throwing behind himself, and he's still putting that pass on the money. Now, those passes didn't always result in assists, but he can't shoot the ball for the guys he's passing the ball to. So that pass showed me, even as the week progressed, he started to learn from, you know, teams are seeing that this is a pass that I want to throw the defender on the weak side. So now he's reading at least three different defenders. He's trying to take this away, but he's given up something else because, you know, they're playing, you know, strong side three and weak side two. So those were the things that really jumped out at me. I feel very strongly that he's a great value going forward when you talk about his age and his cap hit and how many years the Pelicans have of him being cost controlled from what we saw right this season. I mean, this summer league. But we still need to measure those expectations in regards to what we expect from him this year as a rookie. And if he can be the ninth or the 10th man on a team that goes about 500 and shows enough of, you know, the flash and the splash and maybe towards the end of the year is really come along defensively, then I will be, you know, you guys will just be asking me to shut up when we come, you know, to talking about this next year.
Hi, this is Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. There are many life changes that can happen after divorce that make it difficult or impossible to uphold requirements of your divorce decree. The orders issued in a divorce are based on the facts presented at that time, but the circumstances used in issuing those orders can obviously change. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell.
Contact CordellCordell.com, 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
But I've already
Chris,
gone
you had some. Chris, you had some, but that's all right. Chris, you had some, you know, specific things that you talked about in his game, particularly around his finishing at the rim. And we saw a little bit of that today late in the game where he made a couple of poor decisions in deciding to go in and try to finish and having to kind of lean back and flip up something at the rim. Again, like we said, these guys are just getting their feet wet here. But that was something you pointed to. And also going to Dave's point, I'd like you to react on the minutes situation in the backcourt, because we got a lot of questions now about where NAW's place will be in the guard hierarchy. We're looking at 96 minutes in the backcourt. That's what you have to fill.
Yeah.
And you figure two-thirds of those alone go to Lonzo Ball if he's playing 25 to 30 minutes, and you know Drew's playing 30 to 34 minutes. That's two-thirds of that 96, and you still have to count for J.J. Redick, Josh Hart, NAW, Etuan Moore, and Frank Jackson in those minutes. Mm-hmm. What would you think is a realistic amount of playing time for him? And go back to your observations on his play.
Okay, so well, and this is what I put on Twitter before I decided not to be an idiot and scroll up that this was about podcast questions. So I apologize for putting that up there early. But no, man, I mean, so the question Ryan asked in regards to things that the guys could work on, and what I, and one of the things that I saw was his creativeness when finishing at the rim, strictly when being met vertically by a defender. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when you're on a basketball floor and you have, and it surprised me that he had the amount in his tool chest that he has to use at, you know, at any time. Sometimes you get caught up in trying to figure out, well, which one am I pulling out right here? And I think sometimes you see him in between moves, in between thoughts on what he's going to do. And then he's like, oh, shit, all right, well, I gotta do something here. I got to finish here. And he's not there yet. I don't think he has he's not where he will be at physically to where he can take that contact and come out with the creative finish as I think he will, as he's shown in some spaces that he can put together, the underhanded scoop, you know, the pivot into a fadeaway. I think the in-between, I think once you get past the three-point line and him figuring out, okay, well, which way am I going to go to it? I see somebody right here. Am I going to throw this? I mean, there's so many things. He's so talented, I think, at his age. He's going to have to figure out how to trim down some of those extra plays, or extra tough, difficult tasks that he wants to pull off. But, I mean, again, that will come in time with experience and confidence. The kid has a lot of aggression about him. He has a lot of fight, a lot of dog in him. I don't see, you know, a lot of worry about him being able to finish that. People say that he's not the best of athletes, but, you know, I see a lot of craftiness in his game that will make up for that, right? The pass, I mean, everybody talked about the turnovers. I mean, of course, that's going to be something he's going to have to fix. If you're having 16 turnovers in the summer league, what are you going to do at the next level? You know, playing against much better athletes and much better talent. I think, you know, I guess, you know, when you asked about the minutes, my thought is when, let's say he plays, because to me, I put him in that 10 to 15 minute range, because I think based off just, you know, whether it be favor, talent, skill sets, whatever, you know, however you feel, Josh Hart, Frank Jackson, and if Etuan Moore is still on the roster, those guys should be, you know, above him in the pecking order off the bench, unless he beats one of them out, which is also possible. But if he does end up on the floor, is it going to be as a primary ball handler? Is he going to be more so off the ball? We don't know yet directly how Alvin Gentry is going to structure this thing. You know, is Brandon Ingram gonna play some early minutes with the starters and then lead the second unit? You know, is he going to split up Lonzo and Drew in some areas and maybe have Lonzo or Drew lead the second unit for a time? You know, I'm not sure yet. I think if he's able to lead the offense, I think he'll be in good hands. It will give him the time. I mean, the kid looks like, you know, he's really comfortable in control. I think he can play off the ball. But my fear is with somebody like him who is coming off the summer league that he's having, if he's put in a situation where he's off the ball, you know, trying to make plays, you know, in, you know, secondary ways, I worry that he may get too antsy and may get in his head a little bit too much. Maybe worried about the quick hook. Maybe worried about, you know, someone else being subbed in for him quickly. I just want him to be in a spot where he can continue to, you know, to build his confidence, work on some of his flaws. I know everybody's excited about the performances that we've seen for him. You know, I mean, he'll be up there for Summer League MVP. I mean, I have a list right now of the last six Summer League MVPs. You have Jonas Valanciunas, you have Glenn Rice Jr., Kyle Anderson, Tyus Jones, and two Pelicans, Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart. Some solid role players, a couple, you know, one guy in, you know, Lonzo Ball that I think has some sort of all-star talent that he still is going to have to work together. You know, and you have, you know, a journeyman, you know, in Glenn Rice Jr. And Jonas Valanciunas has shown in spurts that, you know, he can be, you know, a very solid double-double threat. But, I mean, we're not looking at game breakers. We're not looking at guys that are necessarily changing the league in the past 6 years, per se, so far. So I hope that, you know, we are we are keeping things in perspective in regards to it being what we've seen in summer league against summer league talent. I will say though, he seems to fit 100% what David Gribben wants to do in regards to flexibility, as he can play both guard spots. It can do both of the things that you would ask for, both from an offensive and a defensive perspective. He can guard multiple positions. I think that will help him out. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, in football, when you're starting out as a rookie, some of the times you're not going to come out. You know, a lot of times you got to make the team by, you know, by doing a little thing, by playing special teams. The good thing about him is that he does some of those things well already. Like, he fights through screens, you know, in a way for a guard, you know, you don't really always see as consistent as he's been able to display. That will change. Everybody won't be setting half screens at the next level per se. But the fact that he even has that fight, he has those techniques down to be able to recover the switch, whatever the case is, will help him, because those are the type of things I think Elvin Gentry will want to see from a rookie, because they're not going to want to hand him a damn thing. So I'm encouraged, you know, when it's all said and done about this kid. I think he has a lot of skills. I think his upside, I think Fish is right about his upside. I think it is, you know, it can be fairly high, especially when you consider the type of talent he's going to be playing next to that are going to make him better. I just hope that we are tempering the expectations just a bit. I see people talking about Lonzo needs to be scared for his job, and you know, Zion might not even be the best rookie on his team. And I've seen so much stuff on there, man. I just hope, you know, we chill, and we don't know what this guy is going to get even from a minutes perspective. But you have to like some of the things that you saw, even against the people he was playing against. Ran over.
Ollie, I'm going to let you hit on a couple of guys who are really fighting for their spots. We know that this year the competition for roster spots is going to be ridiculous at the lower end. Trayvon Blewett, who we knew from last season, was a guy who people, you know, wanted to see more of as a shooter. Got himself, had an injury last season while he was playing in the G League. Didn't get to play as often as he liked. Wasn't able to come and play for the Pels once the season was effectively over, and maybe see what he could have done against NBA competition. But he had another very good experience, 11 points, shot 43% from the field. And then the other, who you mentioned at the beginning, Cavell Williams out of LSU, his first two games, he looked great, put up double. His last two, a little bit less effective, around 8 points, 8 boards for the summer, shot 55%. What do you think about those guys and their prospects to either hang on and go to the G League, or or are they looking for jobs? Have they auditioned well for a job somewhere else?
And I don't get to talk about Nikhil Alexander Walker at all. Come on, man. I'm going to give three things real quick on Na, and then I'm going to answer your question.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, number one, I think everybody should be impressed with Nikhil Alexander Walker for one reason alone. He showed everything out there. He's a legitimate two-way player. How many instances did we see, and I'm just going to recall one thing today, where he either had a bad shot, you know, settled for a bad shot, or had a turnover. But you know what he did? He ran back, got in front of his man, came up with a steal, which led to a quick fast break, 2 points for the Pelicans. I think he averaged under 3 steals, but I swear this kid seemingly was coming up with 4 steals a game. I love that two-way impact. Number two, you've got to love the fact that he's already shown a hardened step back. I mean, what rookie is going to attempt that more than once and actually get away with it and knock down the shot? I'm telling you, I think his potential's out there. I understand why Fish is all excited about this guy. His ceiling is a legitimate starter in this league, and if people can't see that, I don't know how you can't look at these highs and then figure out all he's got to do is work on, you know, his whole game, strength, everything that. But if he shows those glimpses, that's all you want to see, right? And he shows it. So to me, I got to point that out. Now I'm trying to remember my third thing. You got me all riled up by not asking me a question about Nikhil.
Keep it under 2 hours.
Yeah, okay. Well, if the third one comes to me, I'll bring it up. But those were the first two things. Anyways, so Trayvon Blewett, I thought, actually did a good job for himself. He proved that not only can he shoot and make, of course, that spot-up three we saw last year, I thought he was making a lot of jump shots this summer league on the move, whether he's coming off a pick, one dribble. He was on the move on a lot of those attempts, and he got hot a few times. So I think that skill alone is going to carve out a role with some team. I'm not sure if the Pelicans are going to go dive back in that well, simply because you look at the roster depth. I'm just not certain that he has enough the ball handling that they would think, you know, okay, this guy's worth it, because it's just, they're so deep at wings who can shoot and can play a little defense. And I think he's on that lowest, he's on the lowest tier among the whole group that's ahead of him on the Pelicans roster. So I think I'm going to restrain myself on getting a little too excited about him. Now, look, if nobody signs him, I think to a two-way deal, or, you know, maybe somebody sees enough and gives him an unguaranteed NBA contract. But I think there's a good chance he could end up on the Pel's G League team next year. They've got their own. They want to fill out the roster. Maybe there's a continuity thing to where the coaches say, hey, we like what you've done. You come over here, we'll highlight you on our G League team. And, you know, injuries happen and you can shoot. And there's a couple other things we like about you. Like, for instance, his size, he seems to be able to be a decent secondary playmaker at times. So there's some other things there that could maybe be developed a little bit further to where he could be a backup, give you some backup minutes on some teams, maybe even the Pelicans if they get hit with injuries like we've seen in the past. But otherwise than that, no, I just don't like his ceiling. I don't think there's enough there to where you automatically are like, oh, we got to get this guy and let's right up front give him a two-way deal. I don't think, you know, I just don't see it. So as for Cavell Bigby Williams, you mentioned it, David. He got off to a great start. You know, he came out of nowhere, right? We didn't even know he was a starter. Will and Andrew, who were reporting, you know, right when that game one was tipping off, I forget who was supposed to be the starter. Was it Christian Wood? I can't even remember. But anyways, yeah, it was this Christian guy. Okay, yeah. So Cavell's all of a sudden starting, a guy that's not even on the roster that we were given, right, for Summer League. So that was a surprise. He went on to have a couple double-doubles. And I really liked what he did, you know, on both ends of the floor, finishing offensively and then, of course, defending the rim and grabbing all those rebounds. He really took a step back in these last several games or so for me to where I wouldn't be comfortable giving him a two-way deal either. You know, I don't think he's outright, you know, fit for, you know, that kind of contract. I'd rather see him kind of prove it in the G League, because he really vanished, especially today. He had a problem finishing. I remember he had a couple clean looks and he got rejected like right at the rim. He wasn't that force at all defensively the Pelicans needed against Brandon Clark and, you know, those other tough rebounders for Memphis. I think they had, what, 16 offensive rebounds? That's where they won the game today, right? Both teams yes. weren't really going offensively with their shots for the most part. And that's where, you know, the game was won. You know, the second chance is coming up with the 50-50 balls. So he didn't show me enough either. So I think it's still open. I think that Zillin Cheatham, we got to talk a little about more. And I was high on this guy coming in the summer league, but, you know, he had a lot more down games than I expect. And really it was all related to his offense. His motor, fantastic. Him being kind of that scrappy, feisty defender, that was there as well. He tried his heart out for all those rebounds. But when it came to just putting the ball in the hole or making a smart pass or just even making a basketball move, to where he tried to dribble from the perimeter when he tried to take a guy he thought he could beat and either wound up, you know, stepping over his feet a little bit, fumbling it away, or just throwing the ball out of bounds when he's trying to hit an open man. So he's got a lot of work to do. I can understand them being high in his motor, but boy, offensively, he was the rawest of the bunch to me. So I know he's on a two-way deal, but that's not really cemented in stone. The Pelicans can change your mind, obviously. Let him go, get somebody else in his place. So yeah, I mean, I didn't see anybody clear outright that, hey, I want this guy in a two-way deal and I feel good about it. So is anybody else want to add something to that?
Yeah, Fish, do you have somebody who would be a candidate for that second two-way spot out of these guys? Or do you think the Pelicans look somewhere else on another summer league roster or another free agent out there?
Honestly, none of the other guys really jumped out at me. Maybe Dawkins a little bit, but I mean, they're all so deep at guard. I mean, if you're giving a two-way deal to somebody, you're kind of just hoping that someone pops. And I can see, even with Zylan not necessarily having the greatest summer league, and it was wild to me from that second game before the rookies came, where he kind of looked good. Because it was pretty much just him with Frank Jackson and Zion Williamson sitting out. So that second game was kind of the Zylan game. And then you got Naw and you got Didi and you got Jackson on the court, and he just completely disappeared. And you could see maybe he's not that elite of an athlete. He was just surrounded by lesser athletes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Pelicans have so much coming in terms of rookies, and the fact that we need to consider that Didi's either going to be a rookie next year or the following year, depending on how long they plan on stashing him. And then all the other picks that they have coming in, that Zion has at least the body for it. And he was clearly their highest target. I mean, they signed him almost exactly after the draft itself ended. So, I mean, you can keep him, and maybe you can keep, the guy from LSU, Bigby. You could keep him maybe on a two-way deal. I know he has an Exhibit 10 deal, which is pretty much a camp deal that they may be able to convert or turn into or tear up and turn into a two-way deal. Why not take your chances on, you know, guys who have, you know, at least NBA bodies and an NBA measurements, and see if they can pop. So with your two-way deals, it's not necessarily this is the guy that we think is the most likely to eventually turn into somebody that can hold on to your 12th or 13th roster spot in the NBA. Go ahead and swing for the fences. Maybe you get, you know, a guy who really pops and he just needs some more time, but he already has the measurables that, you know, he can contribute if he can figure the rest of it out. So I'm not terribly concerned with it at this point, with what the Pelicans are going to do with their two-way deals. I mean, the Pelicans right now have 16 actual NBA players under contract. They have to, and they're going to bring more bodies in because they'll bring 20 bodies into camp. But they have to, eventually there's going to be a decision of which of these unguaranteed guys isn't going to be on the roster on opening night, between Christian Wood and Frank Jackson and Kenrick Williams. And that decision, to me, looms largest between now and opening night.
Chris, let's talk about Kenrick Williams. He had very good moments, and he had very disappointing moments. There were things that you could clearly see physically. He's matured from last season. He's a lot bigger. He's still not an elite athlete, but his intensity is there. Has Kenrick done enough to cement a spot in the rotation for the Pelicans, or is he a guy who's on the fence?
I mean, I don't know if him submitting a spot in the rotation means he plays, you know, more than 5 minutes. But until we figure out who the hell is going to be coming off the bench handling the basketball, I think he deserves at least a thought. I think he'll get a few minutes, and I mean. I really, you know, me and Ali were talking about it, and I talked with Kevin and Preston about it as well. You know, it seemed like, you know, this was kind of an audition, you know, for certain guys to, you know, to handle the basketball maybe more than they will once training camp and the actual game start. And I mean, I was impressed by the way Kenrick handled himself, man. I mean, you know, I loved watching Point Kenny. And the thing about him, you know, he's one of the guys who was on the roster from last season. It already fits the type of vision that David Griffin has in regards to his flexibility and being able to do a bunch of different things on the basketball floor. He's gonna fill up a box score, even if it's only in 5 or 10 minutes. He's, you know, from a point, rebound, assist perspective. He makes the right play. He'll never be the greatest of athletes. His aggression meter won't always be on high. I mean, sometimes, you know, I would like him to, you know, to say, all right, you know, just clear out, you guys get out of my way, I'm gonna make this play here. But that's just not who he is, and that's fine. That's perfectly fine. But when you look at his size, you look at the unselfishness that he plays with, the overall basketball IQ, to just maybe if it isn't making the assist, he makes the right pass to the assist. Unfortunately, sometimes, you know, he's still working on that handle. his lack of, you know, of burst can get him caught into rough situations when he's being defended by quicker or more agile guys. But I mean, he has so many things that you know that you have to like. I think he's, you know, he's a really, I think he's going to be a pretty good spot up shooter. And you know, I mean, I think, you know, he's one of, even if it's on a lower tier, he's a glue guy. He's a guy that isn't going to need the basketball. He isn't going to, you know, he isn't going to need much of your time, you know, to or much responsibility to go out there and make plays. You know, I loved watching his development as a passer. Some of the quick reads he made off of pick and rolls. Wow. I mean, we were talking about it. I mean, outside of Nall, the Pelicans didn't really have a guard that could handle the ball and that could make consecutive plays running the offense or off a pick and roll. And, you know, when Jackson Hayes first stepped on the floor, I watched him dive off of pick and roll after pick and roll, and nobody was finding him. It just, you know, I mean, Nall found him a few times. But in that first game specifically, you know, for Kenrich, when he started to handle the ball, he made plays happen. He found guys, didn't say much, didn't really show much emotion, but he was always in the right place at the right time. And I think those type of things, they're gonna lead him a long way. And not to mention, I mean, again, he has ideal size at that small four, you know, power four position, depending on what type of size roster or lineup you're putting out there. It's a deep roster, man. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be 5 minutes, but those guys that give maximum effort, they always find a way to steal minutes from other players. And I don't think he's going to be an exception. I'm excited about what he can bring off the bench. And the that him just being a part of a bunch of other guys, a part of a team, it looks like it's going to have a lot of guys that have really good basketball IQs.
Chris, you got to run, right?
I got to run.
So we're going to let you go, and then Ollie, Fish, and I will hit some rapid-fire Twitter questions. But, Chris, thank you so much for joining us. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Impatient Bull. And, of course, he and Kevin have written their magnum opus. You should check that out as well, their film. Chris, you want to tell them the name of the movie again?
Hey,
tell
man,
the name of the movie again before you hit out.
Okay, so it's called Two Eyes, basically Two Eyes to Tango. If you don't know what it's about, you know, there's a villain. It's basically about Zion and, you know, his partner Alvin Kamara. It's pretty good. It has a lot of attributes of the city that come to play. A lot of different Pelicans and basketball players that make cameos, as well as, you know, some media members. It was a really fun piece. We had a great time putting it together, man. So hope everybody enjoys it. Kevin and I mean, well, Kevin worked his ass off, and you know, I did my part as well. So it was a good time.
All right, Chris. We'll talk to you soon, my man.
As always, bro.
All right, guys, so let's go through some rapid fire. You got 30 seconds to answer these questions. We're going to start with our good friend Tejada and his two-parter. I'm going to give this one to Ollie. The first part I think we've covered with Jackson Hayes, but let's who would you like to see NAW paired with in the backcourt when he gets minutes this season? And did anybody who went to Vegas make any Pelican future bets?
Backcourt partner. I want one dead-eye shooter, so either Redick or Hart. And then I would prefer Holiday. I would like when you go smaller with usually like you do with, you know, reserve team, second teams off the bench. Yeah, I think that would be the best. You keep Holiday out there, you bring out a shooter, then you bring Nikhil to where he's not, you know, forced to run the offense. He's got Drew Holiday sitting out there. And of course, he's got one of the better shooters in the NBA out there on the wing as an outlet for a good three. So those are my two.
All right, Fish, for this one comes from Charles Pierre. Why are the Pels sending Didi to Australia with what he's shown already? He's shown he's ready. Trade Etuan for a backup three and let the Brazilian bomber play unless the Pelicans think they have too many rookies on the team. Your response to that is?
Because they can. When they drafted him, that was part of the deal. I mean, they didn't draft him with the idea and maybe we'll bring you in or not. When they picked him, they told him, we're going to put you someplace overseas. We don't think you're necessarily ready yet. And even though he's looked great in the summer league, you keep with the plan that you had now. And now, you know, from what we've seen and the fact he's going to have a year in Australia to get better and work on language thing and work on his handle and everything else, that the Pelicans have a good rookie coming in next year. The Pelicans will probably use some cap space or an exception to sign him probably to a 3 or 4 year deal. And you already know the Pelicans have another body coming in right now this year with the number of expiring contracts they have. It makes a lot of sense to stash him at least for a year, if not longer, to give him some time to marinate and be more prepared so that when he does come over, he's ready to be successful right away. So I think it's all of that is the fact that the Pelicans are looking long game.
Ollie, back to you. Why hasn't J.J. Redick signing been announced yet? Should I worry? That comes from Chance Hester.
I wouldn't worry. I mean, J.J. Redick, stand-up individual, right? We've heard he's such a class act off the court. And David Griffin, you know, he's not going to go back on his word either. You got to think it has to do with how they're trying to fill out the books, because there's a specific order and sequence to when you're, you know, sign these players to contracts to make the salary cap work best for you. So I think that's all this is. I think if there was any kind of, you know, disgruntled feelings on one end or the other, we would have heard something by now, because J.J. Redick does not lack for suitors around the league. So I think this is just, you know, what I basically said. There's nothing to worry about here, basically.
I think maybe it's partially on who the guaranteed deals are on the roster. Is that maybe slowing it up? Fish, you might know better than I.
The Pelicans right now should have enough cap space already to fit him in. Mm-hmm. Precisely why there is the delay, maybe they plan on doing something with that cap space short term. Mm-hmm. Because there are other deals that might necessarily need to be done. But the Pelicans have told, you know, they've come to an agreement with him. So he's going to be signed. He'll be signed before.
I hate to interrupt you. Let me ask you this. Do you think then, because we speculated a little bit, but do you think the Darius Miller signing has anything possibly to do with something that Griffin may be working on before Redick comes in?
Possibly, but right now they have pretty much what they're doing is they're going to be signing Darius Miller with his early bird rights to that bigger deal. So his cap hold remains the smaller number.
Right.
So the eventual order would most likely be Redick is signed and then Darius Miller is signed. And then Melly will actually be the last signing as he goes into the room exception. So
gotcha.
It could be anything. I mean, first of all, it's only July 14th. And if we remember back to when Drew Holiday first came over, the delay for him was he was getting married. So there, I mean, JJ Redick might have, you know, something going on this summer where he was like, hey, can you hold off? And David Griffin said, absolutely, we can hold off. That's no problem at all. So I don't think that there's anything to worry about that transaction going through. It just might be interesting, the thing that they do before then with the cap space. That might be the thing that they're holding the cap space on, holding on to that cap space momentarily for.
Exactly. Quick, I want to bring up, Dave, you know, if you may think back, David Griffin, I forget what game it was here in the summer league, but he was openly trying to invite Vince Carter to sign with the Pelicans, right? So I think there is still maybe somebody's chasing a veteran. So he's not done building this roster out yet.
Quick yes or no, Fish, and I know what the answer is going to be, but do you think Aubrey Dawkins makes the final roster?
No, I don't think anyone that was on the summer league roster that wasn't already on a contract is making the Pelicans. But if Aubrey Dawkins is up to it and he doesn't want to go over to Europe or something like that, I could definitely see him playing for the Erie BayHawks and possibly being on a two-way deal.
All right, back to Ollie. We've already talked about minutes, so we're not going to touch that one. This is a real projection question from Josh Cook. Where do you see the Pels realistically finishing in a tough Western Conference now?
I'm going to say ninth, even though I want to be optimistic and say they'll make the playoffs. But there's just too many things that have to go right. Of course, they're going to have to avoid injury. Of course, the veterans are going to have to all really play up to their abilities, and that's Redick, Holiday, and Favors. And, of course, you're going to need somebody to take a step forward in that starting lineup. And I'm really looking hard at Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball, because I think the Pelicans know largely what they'll get off the bench, right? I mean, of course, they've got, you know, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, some rookies. Frank Jackson, you can include in that group. But they've got Etuan Moore, Josh Hart there. So I'm not too worried about the bench. But, yeah, I think I'm comfortable giving them right around 41, 42 wins. Like I said, about ninth.
All right. Back to Fish for Fernando Ritzman. Wouldn't you think Moore has to be traded before the season? You'd have to find out about young guys like Frank and Hart, not to mention what NAW showed probably gets them more time than initially thought. I don't think Etuan's being traded. What do you think?
I mean, he could be traded. I wouldn't be surprised if he was traded between now and the beginning of the season. But I think the more likely scenario is that his expiring contract and then Darius Miller's contract eventually are combined, and that there's a time limit on that. Darius Miller, after he signs his contract, can't be traded again for a certain amount of time. That time, since he's being signed with early bird rights, that's actually going to be January 15th, if I remember correctly. Most contracts are usually December 15th, but his, since it's an early bird rights contract, would be January 15th, if I remember. I can't remember precisely where I read that.
Which would be right around the deadline.
So I wouldn't expect that the Pelicans are in a rush to get actual NBA players off of the roster. Actually, Etuan Moore was one of the names that David Griffin brought up in one of his interviews as the veterans that he's looking to kind of guide this team. He mentioned Drew Holiday, obviously, Derek Favors, J.J. Redick, and Etuan Moore as the four. So I don't think that the Pelicans are in a hurry to get off of his contract. And even if he is on the team and he's not necessarily playing, or playing a lot, or playing as much as you would expect given his contract and his contributions up to this point, Etuan Moore is one of those guys that's such a consummate professional that you don't have to worry about that causing any kind of waves in the locker room. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's moved, but I don't think that that is a pressing concern for the front office right now.
Ali,
Rob, you answer a question. Dave, I want you to answer some questions.
All right. I'm sorry. I'll take this one then. This is from Trade with the Waves, and it's what will be the focus of Zion during the offseason, conditioning mainly or shooting? Well, we saw David Griffin talked about Zion. I mean, he only played 9 minutes in summer league, got 11 points. Clearly, he was not in his best shape. Mike Krzyzewski said so. David Griffin said so. I thought the really encouraging thing today was when Griffin said that for the majority of the summer, Zion will be in New Orleans with the physical training staff, getting him into NBA shape. I think that means you're going to see more definition out of him over the course of the season. I think that's something that they're going to work on. I like to call Zion country strong. He's a guy who hasn't had to lift a lot of weights his whole life to get big. And then when you get to the pro level, you have to refine that strength in order to endure for 82 games. It's the thing that Michael Jordan figured out. It's the thing a lot of players understand, that it's just a different body. And I think that you'll see some mass lost from Zion. I don't think you'll ever see him at 245 or whatever the hell Gilbert Arenas was talking about the other day, moving Zion to shooting guard. But I think that they will try to trim him down a little bit, because players do tend to gain weight over the course of the season rather than lose it, which is weird to me, but I see that in the NBA all the time. But I think obviously his shooting does need work. It's a little flat on his free throws and his jumper. He doesn't really get much lift on his shot at this point. It's more of a set shot. But those, again, he's 19 years old. He's been a kid whose athleticism has gotten him extremely far. You're going to polish his game, and I think that's why Griffin has constantly stated that he's not a savior at this point. You could not lean on him to do all the things that a savior would be required to do today. But there would be a lot of work for Zion, which is, and he certainly has seems to be up to it. So this one's for you then, Ali. If Darius Miller and Moore are trade ships to be shipped at the deadline, this one comes from Frank Sowett. What do you think the Pelicans would realistically get in return for them?
I think that they would be chasing a star, that that's more going to be salary ballast, and that they would offload a couple of picks and chase a Bradley Beal or some other player that's, you know, say top 40, top 30, or hopefully even better than that, to add to this roster. Griffin always wants, he said he's always going to be looking to improve the team. And as we know, 15 spots, you want to look for a quality over quantity. They've already got their quantity. They nailed their quantity, it seemed like, in a matter of a couple of weeks between that Anthony Davis trade and the draft. So they now, I think, are going to look just to add, like I said, another star. I think I heard some rumors that they were interested, and they did poke around the league prior to accepting that Anthony Davis trade. And, of course, trading that fourth pick to Atlanta. So I think that's where they'll be headed before the trade deadline, if both Moore and Darius Miller are still on this roster.
Well, that's all the questions we got. And I think we've done about 70 minutes tonight. So that's it. We came in under what we usually had been doing. So pat on the back for that.
Yeah, Dave, one thing I want to throw out there. I remember my third thing with Nikhil on my mini rant, my positive mini rant. I want people to realize that he just was coming off or playing in a second game of a back-to-back where he played over 30 minutes, went to the free throw line 14 times, and ran the Pelicans offense the entire time he was out there yesterday against the Heat. So today, all those people that are jumping off their bandwagon, looking at him go, what, 0 for 7, 0 for 8 in the first half? I mean, guys, seriously?
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, 5 for 23 today, And what we talked about, and I think people, again, that's the perspective you have to remember. These are back-to-back-to-back games. They played overtime yesterday and, again, overtime today. That's going to take a toll on these kids who, again, missed the last couple of months of competitive play after the NCAA season ended back in March for them. So you're talking several months off, and then you're adding into that the NBA level of competition, learning three, you know, only having three practices before you get out on the court and having your body have to work those things. That doesn't bother me. Missing shots was not a concern for me this summer. And I think you guys would both agree with that. It's what shots did guys take? What would their decision-making look like? Those are the things. So I think what people have to understand is that the critiques that we make of players are not coming from a place of, oh, we're jumping on or off bandwagons. It's much more of, these are young players. There have to be critiques. If they were coming in as fully formed, we'd be in a different place. And none of these guys are coming in as fully formed players. There's a lot of development that has to go on. And I think the key that we've taken away from this from the summer is that the Pelicans are committed to developing these guys over the long haul. They're not looking for quick fixes with any of these guys. Am I right or am I right?
Yeah. You're absolutely right, but I wanted Fish to answer that.
Well, no, I agree. I mean, there's a difference between none of their performances have been above reproach, but I think realistically we needed to expect that there were going to be weaknesses and things that needed to be worked on, but that isn't like some massive red flag because Nikhil Alexander Walker is a little aggressive with the passes that he's trying to throw and it leads to turnovers. That's just, I mean, that's a little bit of that is the nature of the beast. And a little bit of that is, well, he was the 17th pick and he was a sophomore coming out of college, not a freshman. So you don't, I mean, he's not coming in here being LeBron. So, I mean, I guess all of the excitement around the players to me is relative to where they were picked and what you expect to get from that versus what they've shown to this point. It's kind of that. So, I mean, a lot of what I've seen on Twitter is a lot of people saying, don't say this. And I'm looking around, I'm like, but no one said that. So stop arguing up against your straw man that you built up, because no one's actually saying that Nikhil Alexander Walker should be starting, opening night. So That's my position.
Yeah, I think, and whenever you look at summer league numbers, let's go back to two summers of Cheick Diallo. And it's not, again, it's not to rip on Cheick, but he put up very good numbers in summers that just didn't translate to the regular season. And his learning curve was higher than maybe the Pelicans anticipated. But he was a second round pick, and relative to where he was picked, you got basically the value of that pick. So I think David's point is dead on in that for this rookie year, for these three guys, you're looking at value relative to where they were taken. And if you're viewing any of them as immediate or near-term starters, then you're probably smoking something, which is cool if that's what you do, but it doesn't help if you're making basketball judgments.
Yeah, Gilbert Arenas, man. Now you're talking about smoke and stuff. I still can't believe he said Zion should be a shooting guard. I can't get that out of my head.
I mean, I don't know what Gilbert was thinking about that. I mean, that is ridiculous. But I mean, outside of this group, we know Zion is the only one who will be a probable starter coming in. The rest of these guys, Nikhil will probably be a rotation guy. Hayes is going to be up and down, probably between the G League and getting a few minutes per game. And then, you know, like I said, with Silva going to Australia, and he'll be there at least a year. I think he can only stay 1 year under the program that he's in. But if he signed for a second year, he would have to do it under the rules of the Australian Basketball League, but the NABL, yeah, National Australian Basketball League. So none of these guys are going to be getting 25 minutes a night outside of Zion. And I think that's just what we need to understand that going forward. As much as we enjoyed this, this is, again, we have to think long-term. That's what David Griffin is thinking. That's what this organization is thinking. And you look at what else they have, the number of guys who they have to evaluate the season, the Lonzo Balls, the Brandon Ingrams, who they are about to make either heavy investments on or move on. You can't give those minutes the guys behind them if you're going to evaluate them properly. But it is very encouraging. I think we're all excited as training camp gets near, then the preseason, and it feels like regular season is just around the corner already. And that's, for the first time in a while, it's a good thing. I'm really excited. How about you? You guys, after this, are we more excited, looking forward to the regular season now?
More excited?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think I could get more excited. I mean, once they traded for Derek Favors, I was all in. So
exactly.
Oh, no, yes. All right, guys. Well, that'll wrap us up for this one. I'm sure we'll be back very soon as more Pelicans news happens, and they've been very active, as we know. So until the next time, for Ali Cosell, David Fisher, and the departed Chris Connor, I'm David Grubb. Let's dance.
Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass, Nothing But Net, and Up and Under podcast networks. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.
Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-o! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi, so about the kitchen. Turns out when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.